Hello, and welcome to Three Books,
an Ela Area Public Library podcast. I'm Kristen Weiser.
I'm Becca Boland.
And welcome back to episode
24.
24.
Because we made such a big stinking deal about episode 23 and how we're not good at math. And apparently if we skip a script, then we don't know how to count anymore.
No.
So, Kristen, we are not in our, we're on a marble table, which is probably doing great things for sound.
Our elbows are, anyway.
Well, the microphone is, too. And we're in a boardroom with high ceilings, so.
And a chair that will throw you backwards, which I think is maybe a staple for all boardrooms at this point.
I don't know what that is. It's like to humble the people that are the highest. Like, once you go flipping back in the middle of a meeting, then. You know, you lose a bit of your bravado, I think.
That could be. Or it's like one of those, like, pirate, if you get, like, a black dot on a paper, that means your time has come. So maybe that's, like, in a board meeting, like, okay, walk of shame.
Wow.
You're out.
Or maybe it's to do that, like, power pose where you put your feet up on the table and your hands behind your head to show people who's really the bossy boss.
That could be.
So anyway, why are we in a boardroom?
Not to chatter, necessarily. We are recording at the Illinois Library Association Annual Conference, and we are here to get as many library staff Three Books as possible.
Yeah. So we have put a call out to our fellow library staff members to come in and share their three books with us. This also, well, no, because Cindy said it last time. I was going to say this will mark the first time that people other than me say three later, but I got Cindy to say it last time.
It's true.
You might even hear some original three later voices at the end. But why did ILA, besides the fact that Cindy is our number one fan, allow us to record here? What special thing happened today, Kristen?
Oh, today we won, I hope this is the right thing. I think it is. We, as in our popular materials department at ELA Library, won the super special Reader's Advisory Service Award through ILA and sponsored by the Adult Reading Roundtable. So for the work that we've been doing for the last couple of years, including this podcast, we received a little recognition today. So that was really sweet.
It felt really great. And we are so proud of our department and all of the hard work that they have put in to help make reading and reading recommendations and all of that other good stuff part of the foundation of our department. So yay.
Yay for us.
I was going to try to record part of it, but there was really nowhere on the table to put
a big old microphone.
A big old microphone and a laptop. So you'll just have to trust us. That
it's real.
It's a real thing. We got a plaque and everything.
Yeah.
So that was really lovely. And we are quite honored to be recognized in that manner. Mm-hmm. So is there anything else we need to say to introduce this? So we're hoping to get librarians and support staff and trustees and whoever else wants to participate.
Library adjacent folks who might happen to be here.
Yeah, people with library passion. So hopefully you'll be hearing from many different voices. Well, we know that you will, but is there anything else we need to tell the peoples?
No.
Okay. Well, enjoy these three books from librarians across this great state, this land of Lincoln. This Illinois Library Association conference.
This is getting very Shakespearean.
That's how we roll.
Yeah.
All right. Three later.
I'm Amanda Kendall. I'm the librarian at Auburn Public Library near Springfield, Illinois. My first choice is a short story collection called The Gin Falls in Love and Other Stories. It's edited by Mervesh Maran. It has lots of really great stories on the central theme of gin. And people like Nnedi Okorafor, who did Binti, Neil Gaiman, and Holly Black, as well as many others. A standout from this collection was How We Remember You by Hikali Montecavo. It really is really profound and meaningful because all of the other stories in the collection were just like so magical and like rich in world building. But this one really like hammered it down and made it emotive and raw. So that's the Gin Falls in Love and Other Stories, edited by Mavesh Maran. My second book is another short story collection. This one's all by the same author, David Eagleman, and it's Some 40 Tales from the Afterlives. And his collection centers around just kind of reimagining of the what afterlife situations might be. Some are religious, but many are not. The real standout on that one is one where Mary Shelley has captured like all the attention of God, and he's rearranged the heavens with her as kind of a queen figure. But there's also where somewhere you spend all your afterlife as an extra in everybody else's dreams, and one where humans are just cancer cells in the larger body of God. And it was always just like really like evocative and philosophical, and it's a quick read, but it really made for a lot of thinking. And the last one is Fragile Things by Neil Gaiman. I'm in a huge Neil Gaiman phase at the moment, as I think most people are because of Good Omens. But his short story collections, I think, are particularly strong. There were a lot of real standouts. I read it because I wanted to read The Problem of Susan, which is meant to tackle the kind of like rampant misogyny in the C.S. Lewis Narnia books. But it was problematic in its own way. It was a really sharp contrast to the Narnia books that I really liked. There's also The Study in Emerald, which was an H.P. Lovecraft meets Sherlock Holmes thing that was mediocre until the end, and it put everything else into focus and made it, like, super good. Or Keepsakes and Treasures was another really good one. Like, it was hard to digest, but really, really good. But that was Fragile Things by Neil Gaiman.
Hi, my name is Carrie Gibbons, and I'm the Circulation and Tech Services Manager at the Washington District Library in Illinois. I picked three books that are not like all-time favorites, because that's just way too hard. I can't even narrow it down to three all-time favorite authors. It's just too hard. So I picked three books that are a favorite in different categories. So the first one that I picked was, I guess, if I were to have an all-time favorite, it would be Watership Down by Richard Adams. And that is one of my all-time favorites because it was the first adult book I read as a kid. The first time I read it, I was 12. I've read it about 10 times since, and I'm 40 now. The last time I read it was a couple years ago. It still holds up so well, and I love it so much. But it was like the first really adult, big, giant, over 400 pages long book that I read as a kid. And it's about rabbits. And I mean, it's about more than rabbits, but the characters are rabbits. And at 12, that was so awesome. And it's an adventure story. If you decide to read it as an adult, it can be a political story. It's a story about community. It's a story about change. It's a story about telling stories. I love it so much. It's about a group of rabbits, and one of them has like premonitions. They think that their warren is going to be destroyed, so they decide to leave, and they trek many miles across the countryside to find a new home to live in, and then have to deal with the challenges of their new home and their new location. And it's just a great story. I love it so much. I know I'm repeating myself, but I do love it, and it's so good. So Watership Down by Richard Adams, awesome. The second book that I chose is my favorite horror book, because it is October and we're getting close to Halloween. And I'm maybe an odd duck in that I can read horror books just fine, but I cannot watch horror movies. They scare me so much. I cannot watch them, but I do like the genre, and I do like horror novels and short stories because I like that I can take my time with them. If it gets to be too much, I can close it and put it down for a while. I like to explore the idea of what scares us. And so my favorite horror novel is a recent one, but this is an author who I've come to like everything he's ever put out. The Cabin at the End of the World by Paul Tremblay. And it came out last year, so 2018. It is rough. It is about a family, two dads and their daughter, and they go for a vacation to a cabin that feels like it's at the end of the world. It's on a remote lake. There's nothing around it. There's a long driveway you have to travel down to get anywhere. It's complete solitude. And the little girl, the daughter, is playing outside, and somebody comes up the driveway. And starts talking to her, and they have a nice conversation, and this new character wants to talk to her dad's, and at this point, the little girl starts to get like, maybe this isn't okay. Like, no. And so she goes back to the house, and three other people start coming up the drive. And from there, the horror ensues. And I don't want to spoil it. It's a bit of a home invasion type of a story, but not in the way you might think. It's unexpected. I just have to throw out there that it's brutal. And if you're going to read it, I really think it's a very good book. To just be prepared to have your heart ripped out. And I like it because to me it is, I'm also a playwright and I like the Greek tragedies, and it's the closest to a perfect Greek tragedy that I've read in modern American literature. And it is phenomenal, and Paul Tremblay is a phenomenal author. This year he put out a book of short stories called Growing Things that I love. So I would recommend anything by him, but The Cabin at the End of the World by Paul Tremblay. Read it, but be prepared. Well, my third book is my favorite book that I'm reading right now, because I think, like a lot of book lovers, we probably have a lot of irons in the fire and we're reading a bunch of things. And on some level, my favorite book is always the one that I'm reading currently. So I am reading a few books right now, but my favorite that I'm reading currently is more of a novella. It's Wilding Hall by Elizabeth Hand. And it was not on my radar until two of my coworkers had read it and loved it and recommended it and talked it up to me at work at our library. And I started reading it, and it is addictive. It's nearly impossible to put down. I am unfortunately reading it at this conference, so I have to put it down frequently. But it's really, it's good. It's told in the form of interviews with members of a band from the late 70s. What they're being interviewed about took place in the late 70s, but the time period that they're being interviewed in is now. And it's members of a band, their manager, producer, a reporter for a rock and roll magazine, and a psychic. And the band had recorded a song in an old rundown estate called Wilding Hall, and something terrible happened there, which I don't know yet, and I wouldn't spoil anyway, but something terrible went down there while they were recording the album, and so now they're being interviewed about it. And I really love a story that's told through interviews or articles or quote-unquote found material, like World War Z, like other examples are escaping me at the moment, but that fake reality of a story. I'm a sucker for any of that. All of it. Just, yeah. So those are my three favorite books at the moment. If I were on this podcast next week, they might change. So anyway, thanks for this opportunity.
My name is Donna Block. I'm a teen services librarian at the Niles Main District Library. The first book that I want to talk about, it's one that I actually literally just finished listening to in the car. It's Love from A to Z by S.K. Ali. I'm not normally a romance fan. This is like a contemporary romance, but what's really great about it is that the characters are dealing with like other things in their life. Zainab is a Muslim student who is dealing with an Islamophobic teacher, and she's on spring break at her aunt's house in Doha to take a break from all that because she's been suspended. Adam is a college student who's just been diagnosed with muscular sclerosis, and he's also in Doha trying to gather the courage to tell his father and his sister, and they meet, and a romance develops, and I really love this book.
That just came in on my holds through Overdrive, so I'm extra excited to hear about that. Okay. One.
Wait, should I say the title again?
Yeah, say the title again.
Okay, that is Love from A to Z by S.K. Ali. The second one, it's one that I also listen, I've been doing a lot of audio. So the second book is another audio, Patron Saints of Nothing by Randy Ribe. And this one is about a high school senior. He's Filipino-American, and he's just found out that his cousin, who lives back in the Philippines, has died, and his parents won't tell him anything else about it. And he sort of sneakily comes up with an excuse to go and visit his aunt and uncle in the Philippines. But what he really wants to do is track down, like, what exactly happened to his cousin. So there's a little bit of, like, mystery thriller, and then also dealing with, like, different family issues. And this book was amazing, and I don't normally cry at books. I cry at movies and TV shows all the time, but, like, this one made me cry at the end. Again, that was Patron Saints of Nothing by Randy Rebe. So book three, this is sort of like an all-time favorite. I read it for the first time in high school. It's Slaughterhouse-Five by Kurt Vonnegut. He's one of my favorite authors ever, partially because we share a birthday, November 11th, and then partially just because, like, his books are just so, like, kind of kooky and, like, amazing and, like, nothing else. So Slaughterhouse-Five, it's science fiction. It's not a traditional narrative novel and any sense of the word. It's also semi-autobiographical because he was a prisoner of war during World War II. He survived the bombing of Dresden while he was a prisoner of war, and, like, he uses that in his science fiction story. And he never talks about, like, PTSD, but, like, other people who have analyzed it since then have said, like, it's kind of obvious that his character, Billy Pilgrim, who's a stand-in for himself, is dealing with PTSD. And, like, all the things that he talks about in a science fiction sense, like being unstuck in time and, like, all points in time existing, you know, like, even if they've passed, like, they're still going on now. He's dealing with them in a science fiction sort of way, but it's also could be talking about PTSD. Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, I read it in high school and just thought, this is, like, really weird, but I love it and I want to read more. And then, like, looking back now and, like, rereading sections of it, it's like, wow, like, this is amazing in so many other ways that I never thought of before. So again, that's Slaughterhouse-Five by Kurt Vonnegut.
My name is Elizabeth Ellsbury. I am a school library media specialist in the East Aurora School District. My three books today. The first book is The Radium Girls, The Dark Story of America's Shining Women by Kate Moore. This is a story of women who went to work in watch factories using radium-based paint on watch faces so they would glow in the dark. They used a technique that involved them putting the brush in their mouths, and no one talked to them about the dangers of radium. After a couple of years, they began to get sick, and eventually the link between their work and their illnesses was discovered. Unfortunately, most of them did not get very much justice, but their lawsuits paved the way for workmen's comp laws. One of those factories was in Ottawa, Illinois, and this was a story I had never heard about until I read this book, and I feel like it's really important, especially for people in Illinois, to realize this kind of thing happened, and it didn't happen that long ago. Again, the book's name is The Radium Girls, The Dark Story of America's Shining Women by Kate Moore. My second book is a professional development book, Game Changer, Book Access for All Kids by Donalyn Miller and Colby Sharp. This one I read recently, and it just reinforced everything I've been trying to achieve in my school libraries. They talk a lot about well-stocked classroom libraries and school libraries, and how book choice is a huge factor in helping students become readers. And then they also talk about readers' advisory and supporting students in choosing their own books, which I think is a subject that we don't hear enough about, especially in the schools. It's a great book for anyone who works with kids. Again, that book is Game Changer, Book Access for All Kids by Donalyn Miller and Colby Sharp. And my final book is a middle grade book that I really enjoyed, The Trials of Morgan Crow by Jessica Townsend. Morgan Crow was born on Eventide, which makes her the unluckiest person in town. She's doomed to die on her 11th birthday, when instead she is whisked away to the magical land of Nevermore and is given the chance to compete for a place at the Wondrous Society. The world building here is excellent. It's the first book in a middle grade fantasy series, and though its length is intimidating, it is fast paced. Again, The Trials of Morgan Crow by Jessica Townsend.
Hello, my name is Jez Lehman. I am an adult services / programming librarian, and I also do programs and staff training at other libraries in the Chicagoland area. I have a couple of different books today. The first one would be my more traditional favorite book that I've decided to use as, you know, decides my favorite now. It's The Storied Life of A.J. Fickrey by Gabrielle Zevin. It is a great pick for anyone who loves books, libraries, bookstores. It is about a lovable curmudgeon, which is one of my favorite tropes. So it's a grouchy old man who runs a small bookstore on an island near Martha's Vineyard. and his wife passes away. A very rare book is stolen from his bookstore. Things are just not going well for him. And he comes back to the store one day to find a three-year-old girl in the children's section with a note pinned to her saying, "Please take care of her. I want her to grow up around books." And he finds out the next morning that her mother has committed suicide and left this girl. It's the middle of the winter. The ferry very rarely goes to the mainland. So the main character, AJ, gets stuck taking care of this girl for the weekend while they try to sort everything out. And then he ends up keeping her. And it's all about her growing up. And in between chapters are writings that the character has done about different short stories that have formed his life. So it's very interesting. You kind of get book recommendations from those chapters. But, you know, it's great for anybody who loves reading about other books. I recommend it as one of my books for book lovers choices. I just like grouchy old men who end up having hearts of gold. That's one of my things. That was The Storied Life of A.J. Fickrey by Gabrielle Zevin. The next one, I'm cheating. It's actually a trilogy. It is The Wayfarers series by Becky Chambers. The first book is called The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, which originally I picked up just because it's a great title. And it ended up being a very enjoyable audiobook. All of my reading is audio only. So this one, these are all set in space, the space opera. It's got slice of life kind of stories, space travel, fantastic world building, lots of different planets with different types of aliens, what their cultures are like. There's also a difference between the human race. Some of them live on these generation ships still, and some of them have gone and terraformed other planets. So there's difference in culture between those two groups. The first book is about a small crew of a ship that is going to basically dig tunnels to create wormholes for travel out in far space, but it's in an area that's almost a war zone at the moment, so they're putting their lives in danger, and it's a long trip. It's great for people who love Firefly or Doctor Who. It's got that slice of life feel, lots of diverse characters. There's non-binary pronouns used throughout all the books, and it's multiple perspectives, which is one of the main things I look for in finding a good book. The second book is A Closed and Common Orbit, and the third one is Record of a Spaceborne Few. They all focus on completely different groups in the same universe. So they connect to each other, and I feel like I have to tell people this ahead of time, because when I finished The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, I was disappointed to leave those characters, but I ended up falling in love with other ones. And the second one, A Closed and Common Orbit, is actually my favorite. So I just finished these books, so I'm a little bit obsessed at the moment. That's why I chose that one. And that's the Wayfarers series by Becky Chambers. And my last one is just a book that is very special to me. You kind of get that little light glowy feeling in your chest when you've read it. It is a graphic novel. I actually own two copies of the graphic novel because it's all done in kind of a cartoon style. There's no coloring. It's called Everyone's an Alien When You're an Alien Too by Johnny Sun. And Alien is spelled A-L-I-B-N. There's lots of misspellings throughout. They're all on purpose. It's a small alien that comes to Earth to learn about human culture. He ends up finding other things along the way, interacts with plants and animals, never meets a real human, and his reports back to his fellow people who have kind of chosen him for this trip because they don't like him and they just kind of want him out of the way. But it's very sweet. I think it's really important for anybody who has mental health issues. It just kind of makes you feel better. It's very comforting. It does have a cartoony style, so one of my copies I use as a coloring book. And I also have the book on audio, because I do everything on audio, and the author just has a very soothing, comforting voice. So occasionally I will turn it on as a bedtime story. It's very short. I do think it's best to listen to the audiobook while you're looking at the pages as like a read-along, rather than just listening to it on its own. But there were certain jokes that I did not understand until I heard it read out loud. So there's definitely a benefit to either of those. And that is Everyone's an Alien When You're Alien Too by Johnny Sun.
Hi, I'm Joe Marcantonio. I'm the teen place manager at the Schaumburg Township District Library. I'm also the Young Adult Services Forum manager and have been in a teen librarian position for 14 years. I'm going to share with you today my three go-to book talks for reluctant readers and reluctant teens. Number one, a nonfiction title, Mary Roach's Stiff. The tagline is The Interesting Life of the Human Cadaver. And I always tell the students I start off my book talk by saying, this book begins with 26 heads, decapitated heads, in turkey basting pans. And we go from there. That's usually the hook. I explain to them that this is what happens after you die if you donate your body to science or become an organ donor. This book covers what could possibly happen. So the 26 heads are in turkey basting pans are new doctors learning rhinoplasty techniques because you don't want to be the first person to undergo a rhinoplasty procedure from a doctor. And then other parts of the book include The Garden, which is a university's forensic lab. They have all sorts of bodies in various states of decomposition all over in an outdoor area. Some of them are buried, half exposed, buried deeper, and they keep tabs on all the records that go along with the bodies, and FBI agents come out there to compare remains that they've found to figure out the time of death in people.
Is it the body garden or the body farm?
It's the body garden.
Is it?
And they say in the book that at the university, there's always a parking problem, except in the summer outside of the garden because of the smell. So that's my first book. It always hooks teens, and I book talk it so much that every library that I've worked at, I've had to have three copies on the shelf, and they never stay.
And what is it called?
Stiff by Mary Roach. Book two is Battle Royale by Koshun Takami. This book came out in 1999. It was written for a fiction prize. In Japan, a lot of new authors submit for fiction contests, and that's how a lot of new authors in manga and in fiction get published, by entering these contests. So this was very controversial because a lot of the judges loved the book, but they thought that they couldn't allow this to be published because it would cause controversy. What ended up happening was they gave the award to somebody else. People were so interested in it, his book got published and became a mega bestseller, which was then translated into multiple languages. Now, the book talk for teens is that this is a freshman class of Japanese high school students who think that they're going on a regular class trip. There's 42 students, 21 boys, 21 girls. They get on a bus, they're going to a island, and while on the bus, gas is emitted, and they all wake up in a classroom with a collar around their neck, a bag with 3 days of food, water, and a weapon. And they are told that these classmates that they've been attending school with for the past 9 years, they now, only one of them is going to leave the island. Now, if you're thinking that this sounds familiar to Hunger Games, maybe. The other great hook is, along with the inside cover of this book, there's a list of all 42 students, a checklist of all 42 students, and you can keep track which ones are still there at the end of each chapter. And also at the end of chapters, it's like 42 students remaining at chapter one. Chapter two, not so lucky, and then going on the way down. But amazing book. It's 666 pages, and it does not scare teens away. It's so another one that you can be like, look, you are a reader, and you just haven't found the right book yet. Here it is.
What is that one called?
That is Battle Royale by Koshun Takami. And then my third book, which is just my favorite YA book of all time, It's A Wizard of Earthsea by Ursula Le Guin. This one came out in the 70s, and I'm going to give you the synopsis of this and tell me if this sounds a little familiar. A boy is 12 years old. He is living on an island in the Earthsea world, and his village comes under attack. And while they're under attack, he's put into this situation of high stress, and involuntarily he creates a storm and clouds using magic that hide the village from the incoming invaders. The island's resident magician notices that this kid has natural talent and is like, aha, we're taking him to the wizarding school. So he goes off to the wizarding school and gets into the library and promptly gets himself into trouble with books that he shouldn't have been reading and splits himself into two, a dark and a light half, and the rest of the book is him exploring the world of Earthsea while trying to find his other half. That is book one of an amazing trilogy written by Ursula Le Guin, A Wizard of Earthsea. She's always been on the forefront of gender and using characters of color. In fact, Jed is one of the first YA characters that is not your normal white protagonist. So he's described as a dark-skinned boy, and it's an amazing book and an amazing world-building. She's on par with Tolkien. So that's... those are my three go-to book talks for teens.
Hi, I'm Kathy Caudill, and I'm a library trustee at the Ila Area Public Library. I've been one for just over 16 years. And the first book that I would recommend, each of them I chose because not just because of what the book was about, but the context in which I read it and why it was presented to me. The first was we had an old neighborhood book group that had a variety of people, an attorney, a paralegal, a chemist, a woman who had taught English but now was a grammar school principal, a woman who helped remove hazardous waste from sites. It was a very diverse group. And we read many interesting books, and one of which I would never have finished if I had not read it for the group, called Possession by A.S. Byatt. And it was almost 900 pages, and I had to read 200 pages before I could really not put it down. But I then found myself not being able to put it down. And it's two grad students studying Victorian poets, and it's about their interaction and about the Victorian poets and their lives and how they interacted unbeknownst to most people. And the author wrote Victorian poetry, too. Really interesting story. Not as good a movie as it always, almost always is. The second book is called, I should say how in context, I actually first read it as part of an ELA book club that was a daytime book club when I was home with my kids. And then my current book group, it's a small group, but the first book we read together was this book, and it's called Angry Housewives Eating Bonbons by Lorna Landvik. And it's a book about a 40-year neighborhood book club. And I remember at the ELA club, people saying, that's so unrealistic. How would you have a community where people lived there for 40 years? And at the time, I kept thinking, well, that would be my parents living in a community that was similar to that. And the women all have very interesting lives, and it's a really interesting look into their perspective, and it's a book club book, so it's kind of a good way to start a book club. And the third book is actually one that was suggested to me in my book match that I did at our library. One of my favorite books is still A Time to Kill by John Grisham. As an attorney, it's one of my favorite stories of a courtroom setting. And this particular book really wasn't a courtroom setting as much as everything that happened outside of the courtroom relative to a case, and that's Blood Defense by Marcia Clark, which was suggested in my book match discussion, and I really enjoyed her book. I thought that she is an engaging writer, and it was a very interesting and story filled with lots of different things I didn't expect to happen, but I was glad that I finally read it, and I can't wait for the next one. The first one is Possession by A.S. Byatt. The second book is Angry Housewives Eating Bonbons by Lorna Landvik. She's originally wrote a lot of books about people in Minnesota, which is where I grew up, so I always find a lot of her books interesting. And then Blood Defense by Marcia Clark.
I'm Megan Swarick. I am the Reference Services Director for the Schaumburg Township District Library in Schaumburg, Illinois, which is in the northern suburbs near Chicago. And my role is department head in public service. My three books I'm going to talk about today are maybe three in my top five. And so I've been thinking a lot about it. So my first one is We Have Always Lived in the Castle by Shirley Jackson, who is in many ways my spirit animal. I love her, everything she's ever written, but this is my favorite. And that is the story of a deeply dysfunctional family. It centers on the Blackwood sisters, Constance and Mary. A cat, and it slowly unspools the dark circumstances of their lives, and then there's a conflagration of sorts and a resolved at the end. But it is moody and deeply twisted and beautifully written, and anyone who's familiar with the Shirley Jackson's writing style, if you haven't already read this, I would recommend it even higher than The Haunting of Hill House, which is probably her most famous novel. That is We Have Always Lived in the Castle by the wonderful Shirley Jackson. I understand that there is a television series available to watch as well on one of the streaming platforms. I have not engaged with that yet, but
I'll look it up and see if I can put it in the show notes.
The second book, and this is going to make me sound really pretentious, but it is my favorite book in the world, is The Master and Margarita by a Russian author named Mikhail Bulgakov. And that is the story of when the devil and his associates came to 1920s Moscow in the guise of a magician and his familiar, a giant cat. They stage a show and havoc ensues, and they start making mischief amongst the Muscovites. At the same time, there's a parallel story about these two lovers, the master and his love, a woman named Margarita. And so it's also the story of their love, and is being told after the fact by the master, who is in a institution of some sort. And then you get a third story, which the master is a master writer, and so he is writing the story of an imaginary conversation between Pontius Pilate and Jesus Christ at the time where those two characters met. So you get this beautiful story that is three books in one that comes together in this really amazing way, and there are a number of translations available. I would recommend looking at all of them. It's an interesting story of the author as well. So if you have time and interest, you should look into his personal story. This particular book was censored for decades and didn't come out until after he died. But The Master and Margarita by Mikhail Bulgakov is just, I would read it again and again. I probably read it every year. And the third book that I want to talk about is Hardboiled Wonderland in the End of the World by Haruki Murakami, which is my probably favorite living author. I've read everything. That is a story of a parallel story. There's kind of a theme here of a person who is working as a data cleaner. It's a fantasy. So the method by which the data gets cleaned involves some really interesting dissociative magic of sorts. And at the same time that is happening, there's another story about a new resident into this place called the End of the World. So you've got this person who has been contracted to clean data for a scientist, and then you've got this unnamed person who finds themselves in this new town surroundings and is figuring out what their role is here, and then they slowly creep together. And again, like all Murakami, it's just delicious, super precise and evocative and just thrilling. Big fan, if you can say. So that is Hardboiled Wonderland in the End of the World by Haruki Murakami. And those are my three.
Hi, I am Nancy McKay, head of teen services for Byron Library. And I am a co-writer for the graphic novel blog, graphicnovelty2.com. So my first book is going to be a graphic novel. It is The Lock and Key, which is an amazing 6-volume horror graphic novel series that was written by Joe Hill and illustrated by Gabrielle Rodriguez. That will be a Netflix series in 2020.
I didn't know that.
Ooh, I'm so excited. It was supposed to be on Hulu, but for some reason they dropped it.
Oh, well.
Netflix's gain.
Yep.
So, the book premise is, after their father is murdered, the Locke family is devastated, and the three children and their mother head back to their father's ancestral home. While the family believes they have escaped from the monsters of their past, one is still following them, intent on creating more havoc, and a new mysterious enemy is closer than they know. The art in this graphic novel is lush and detailed and brings this supernatural tale to life. The entire 6-book series of Lock and Key is strong and is truly one of the best graphic series out there.
I'll go next. My name is Emily Porter. I'm the director at the Byron Public Library, but my roots are in youth services, so of course they are. So I kind of took this project as like a which 3 books changed my life. So the first one I'll start with is the one that I've read the most, starting the youngest, which is A Wrinkle in Time.
That was such a good book.
It's such a good book. So I think it is one of those books that opens people up to science fiction in a way that is kind of unmatched, in my opinion. It has this really badass girl who doesn't have a lot of confidence, but it grows as the series progresses. She's got a lot of good mentors and a lot of good family and friends in her life. So, yeah, that one changed my life. I think I've read it 20 times. I also named my son Calvin after the boy next door that was so nice to the weirdos. All I want my son to be is nice.
That's
so,
a good goal.
Yeah.
Well, as a teen librarian, I feel like I have to highlight a YA book, and while Eleanor and Park almost made this list, I'm going with the more recent book, Sadie, by Courtney Summers. And I listened to this on audio, and the audio is actually what really elevated the story. So the story is told in 2 alternating viewpoints, 19-year-old Sadie and West McCrae, a journalist who creates a radio podcast around the mystery of Sadie and her sister Maddie. Sadie's beloved younger sister is found murdered on the outskirts of their small, depressed town, and Sadie leaves their hometown to track down who she feels murdered her. While the police can't solve the mystery of Maddie's death or find Sadie, the girl's surrogate grandmother contacts West to see if he can help. What follows is an achingly real journey of discovery as Sadie desperately tracks down every clue that leads her closer and closer to who she feels is responsible. West follows the crumbs of clues afterwards, but is often weeks or months behind Sadie's travels. A heartbreaking picture develops as the girls have had the cards stacked against them from the very beginning, with a drug-addicted mother, no known fathers, and a town with little resources to help them. So Sadie, West, and the whole cast of characters become alive in the audio narration, with Sadie's stutter and desperate need for revenge are heartbreaking, and West's caring demeanor shines through, while all the others truly seem like people you'd meet in everyday life. People on the outer margins of life are realistically rendered, and the sad realities of child sexual abuse are addressed. The ending will gut you. While you don't truly know what happens to Sadie, this unflinching story will make you guess what the likely outcome is.
Well, that sounds good.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, you That's talked okay. about it for a long time
I
after
did.
You finished it. So my second book that changed my life, I think, long term, was one that I read in college, The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay by Michael Chabon, which sadly will probably never be made into a movie.
It's pretty epic.
Well, that was one big complaint, was that it takes, I think, 11 years. There's like an 11-year hiatus where nothing happens to the characters. So for a summary, it is Sammy Clay and Joe Cavalier. And Joe actually starts out in Prague and escapes World War II Nazi Prague by getting in a coffin and gets to America to stay with his cousin, Sammy. So the two main characters are related, but they are totally opposite. Joe is this kind of romantic artist type, you know, has an accent, all the dark and handsome things that I think about him, you know. And then Sammy ends up being the business guy and the writer, and they form a comic book called The Escapist. So Joe uses his training in Prague from this escape artist who understudied Harry Houdini, to kind of embellish his story where he got to fight Nazis from the U.S., from the comfort of his own studio. It's a really epic tale, though. Like, so that's where it starts. There's, like, love interests and romance and sexual identity crises and family things. And, of course, it's epic. But it's based on, what's his name?
Jack Kirby.
I always want to call him Brett for some reason. Anyway, it's based loosely on Brett Kirby's life. Jack Kirby's life. I just did it. That was silly. Anyway, but it really kind of instilled this idea that comics are important and they do more for the world than we really think about, especially now. Right.
They're more nuanced than you would just think of superheroes and tights. It's much more than that. Well, I think like
20 years ago, that is what we thought of graphic novels. Mm-hmm. And it's especially
been
in more
Renaissance of graphic novels. Right.
They've gotten a lot more complicated and I think brought to the forefront of our minds. Like, we can go out in public now and read graphic novels.
Absolutely.
And it's no big deal.
Yes.
But yeah, it used to be for little boys, and they used to fight wars. I mean, these superheroes, like, fought the war for us when we couldn't get over there ourselves.
I mean, I've evolved. Before I was a teen librarian, I briefly was an elementary school teacher, and I was not a super fan of graphic novels, although I liked a few series. I loved the X-Men. I loved the ElfQuest series, and that was from my teenage years. But yet, I still, like, held graphic novels, like, as a other, lesser, you know, literary genre.
I can't tell you how many times, as a youth services librarian, I had to talk to parents and let them know
it's definitely the
that it's okay. That it's okay that their kid is reading this, because it's still reading.
It is.
Anyway, that one changed my life, too.
My last book is My Old True Love by Sheila K. Adams, which is a historical fiction novel that I have read several times over. And it is just one of the most beautiful novels I've ever read. The reader is transported to North Carolina in the mid to late 1800s to a rural community deep in the mountains of Appalachia. We meet Artie, as real a person as I've ever met, who shares her joys and struggles from her teen years onward. Artie marries well and raises a large family on a struggling farm, but the Civil War and heartbreak touch her and her surrounding community. Family connections and music play an integral part of the story, and the author makes you feel as though you are on the front porch with Artie and her family, listening to her sing beautiful traditional ballads. The story would be perfect for book clubs and is an absolute favorite of mine.
My third book is very cliche. I'm going to do it. Harry Potter. I can't help it. I'm pretty sure that the reason why I got my job, my very first adult, you know, big girl library job, was because I was a Harry Potter fan. My predecessor, who was the director at Byron Public Library, also loved Harry Potter. My interview was 45 minutes of us talking about it. and I'm not going to summarize it because everybody knows what it is, but so full disclosure, I'm 36. When the first book came out, my grandma, who was a big library lover, gave it to my brother. I read every word in the house and started it in late middle school and bought it the first day it came out, every book thereafter. Mm-hmm. So, love it. Can't ever stop. Can't stop, won't stop.
As you should.
Absolutely. So good.
I'm Nanette Donahue. I'm the technical services manager at the Champaign Public Library in Champaign, Illinois. My first book is The All of a Kind Family by Sydney Taylor. And this was a book that was given to me when I was probably about 8 years old by one of my all-time favorite teachers, Mrs. Carol Perry. And it's set in the Lower East Side of New York City, and it's a Jewish family, a first-generation immigrant family with five daughters. And the whole premise is it's just all about the daughters and how they're growing up, and it's such a beautiful depiction of Jewish life on the Lower East Side. And I grew up in a community that was pretty homogenous, and so this was really, for me, a window onto a completely different time, a completely different culture, a completely different way of living. And I think it awakened my personal interest in learning through reading about how other people live, and it inspired a lot of curiosity. I certainly thank Mrs. Perry for that, and The All of a Kind Family by Sydney Taylor, still one of my all-time favorites. Glad I was able to give it to my oldest daughter fairly recently. My second book is The Great Believers by Rebecca Mackay, and this is a book that I read last summer. I'm really excited to see stories set in this time. It's set in the late 1980s, and one of the plot threads is about a group of gay men who are coping with the AIDS crisis. It meant a lot to me. In 1989, when I was 15 years old, my Uncle James died of AIDS, and I knew him as my uncle, and I knew him as a person that I loved and looked up to and respected, but I didn't really know who he was. He wasn't out to anybody. We found out he was gay when he was sick and in the hospital. So there was very little I knew about what his life was actually like. And this, I think, gave me some insight into what his community might have been, how his friends might have been reacting, what things might have been going on in his life. There's so much I will never know, but I appreciated The Great Believers by Rebecca Mackay for giving me that sort of insight into what it might have been for him. In my third book, I stewed about this a lot, but I decided on Hollywood Babylon by Kenneth Anger, which is a trashy book. There's nothing else to describe it other than trashy. Kenneth Anger was a child star turned experimental filmmaker, and during his youth, he heard a lot of salacious stories about old Hollywood celebrities. A lot of these are people that have long been forgotten, and he wrote them all in this book, which I believe was banned in the United States for a while because it was so salacious. And it's just over the top ridiculous, some of the things that are said in this book. And what's sad is that some of these things have been kind of accepted as canonical fact about some of these celebrities. There's a podcaster who I really enjoy, Karina Longworth, who has a podcast called You Must Remember This, and she did a recent season debunking all of the lies told in Hollywood Babylon, and I devoured it. But that is still a book where if I see my copy laying around somewhere and I pick it up, 2.5 hours later, I'm still sitting wherever I was reading it because it's irresistible to me. It's like catnip. Even though I know it's trashy and inaccurate, I just love it.
Hi, my name's Quinn. I'm a Reader's Advisory and Teen Services Librarian at the Berwyn Public Library. And for this podcast, I wanted to highlight three of my favorite body positive reads I've read this year. The first one is actually the one I've read most recently, which is To Be Honest by Maggie Ann Martin. It's a YA book, and the main character is a plus-size character, of course. She deals with a mom who just went through this big weight loss show, so she has a lot of body dysmorphia and a lot of body shaming on her daughter and on herself, so she deals with that. And also, she's a senior in high school. Her sister, who's her best friend, has moved on to college, so she's going through a lot of transitions. It hit very close to home for me because her parents also just recently got divorced, and learning how to relate to family once it's been broken. And of course, it wouldn't be a YA book without a little bit of romance, and it's very sweet and very cute, and you'll stop and say, aw, a lot. I did that. I listened to it on audiobook. And it's just a really good book, and it's one I haven't seen on a lot of lists, so I wanted to make sure to highlight it because I think in terms of body positive stories, its own voice is body positive, which is always important because I really dislike reading non-own voices plus size stories because I feel like there's a lot of stuff that they get wrong, but also I think it just has a lot of elements that teens will really latch on to. And that was about To Be Honest by Maggie Ann Martin. All right, the next one I have is If It Makes You Happy by Claire Kahn. I was exposed to Claire Kahn with her debut, Let's Talk About Love, which was one of the first books I read that featured an asexual main character, which was very important to me. So I couldn't not pick this up. It has a really great cover, really colorful, and obviously it also highlights a woman of color who is also plus size, so it's really great representation for teens. It follows Winnie. It's her summer before college. She goes to visit her grandmother in this small town. She goes there every summer to work in her diner, and it's her dream to inherit the diner. And she's also in a polyamorous relationship, which I don't think we see a lot of in YA or really even in adult books. And it's just portrayed so well that I definitely, even for the plus size, representation, I did also want to highlight it because it talks about a different kind of relationship that teens might be exploring or trying to figure out for themselves. And it's just a really great summer read, but also the issues that Winnie goes through. She becomes the queen of the town for the summer. So trying to live up to people's expectations of beauty and what it means to be a woman, while also being one of few women of color in the town and also being plus-sized, I think is something that strikes a chord with a lot of people, no matter their backgrounds. And it's just a really great book. Claire Kahn's on my auto-buy list now because of what she's doing. And that's If It Makes You Happy by Claire Kahn. All right, and my final book is actually not out yet. It's Get a Life, Chloe Brown by Talia Hibbert. You may have heard of it because it is already on the Library Reads list and a bunch of other accolades, including starred reviews from publications. And if you follow me on Twitter, I won't shut up about this book. It's so ridiculously good. It follows the titular Chloe as she moves out on her own. She is a plus size woman of color, but also she deals with fibromyalgia. So it's very rare. I'm a pretty heavy romance reader to find a romance starring a person with a disability and being so frank about that disability and what it means. Talia Hibbert also deals with fibromyalgia, so you really get an in-depth look at what it means to be both disabled and plus size. And it wouldn't be a romance without a dashing main character. So she moves into this apartment, and the apartment maintenance man leaves a lasting impression on her, and she just can't get him out of her head. And as she moves out, she comes up with a to-do list of all the things people think she can't do because she has fibromyalgia and the things she wants to do. And a lot of those are risky, like go on a motorcycle ride, have a one-night stand, and he helps her in some of those. It's very cute. Talia Hibbert has published a lot of romance books, but this is without a doubt her best. Just keep it on your radar because it's one of the best body positive books. And like I said, this is basically a unicorn book. You're not going to find a woman of color who's plus size, who also has a disability, leading a romance. So keep it on your lists. Put it on every recommendation list you have because it's just so ridiculously good. And that was Get a Life, Chloe Brown by Talia Hibbert.
You've been listening to Three Books, an Ela Area Public Library podcast.
Editing by Charlie Crane and produced by us.
Our theme music is provided by Lache Swing.
Write to us at 3books podcast, that's 3 spelled out, bookspodcast@gmail.com, and let us know what you're reading or what your favorite books are. You can find us on Twitter at 3bookspod, and don't forget to subscribe if you are willing to give us a little 5-star rating. It will help other people to find us and enjoy the show as well.
You can find the books at your local public library or stop by Ela Area Public Library and we'll help you find those. And you'll be able to find our show notes with the titles, the authors, anything else that we might need to link to at eapl.org/3books, and that's 3 spelled out. And don't forget to check out our 3-book special collection.
I'm Becca Boland.
And I'm Kristen Weiser.
3 you later.
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 All right, 3 you later.
Thanks for having us so much.
This was a pleasure.
It was super fun.
And we just want to say,
3 you later.